Accession number 28650, Mr. Gordon Mellor, Reel 3. Now, what are the kinds of, I don't know whether there are any other duties you had other than guard duty. I mean, were there fire pickets and things like that, or was that it?
There were fire pickets. I don't remember getting nominated for any duty like that. It was these odd night duties that were of the main interest. We did a lot of square bashing. We smartened up no end.
What are the training? I mean, was there any training at all on observation or weapons?
Oh, yes, we can come on to that. Yes, we did get on to the weapons, and it was only rifles. There wasn't anything much about other weapons because there was such a large variety of them. But yes, they were mentioned, and of course we went down to the butts and we had some firing practice.
How did this start? Just learning to, it's quite, I mean, the Lee Enfield, people think it's simple, but it's quite a complicated weapon in many ways to get the hang of, you know, and become a good shot with.
Yes.
How did they train you, or what do you remember of your training? And how?
Well, we did rifle drill, and we used the short Lee Enfield for that. When we went down for shooting practice in the first instance, we had, I think it was what was called a Ross. I'm not sure it was
a Canadian
one. I think it was a Canadian one. And it had been tubed, and it only fired small caliber ammunition.
.22.
I believe that's what it was. So we, in the first instance, we went to an indoor range and got the down on the floor in groups of three or five perhaps, and we had targets, and we followed the instructions as to how to behave and how to shoot. I'd had quite a reasonable air gun ever since I was about 10, I think. I used it in the back garden and had target up and what have you. So I had a pretty fair idea what was going on. I showed up fairly well with the Ross. It wasn't my favourite gun at all.
Why not?
I seemed to not get quite the accuracy that I expected. Perhaps I had an off day when we started on those, but I wasn't over keen on it. And shortly after that, then of course they took us to the outdoor range when we used the Enfield.
Do you find that better?
I found it better myself. I don't know why. Perhaps the balance was more suitable. Of course, the kick on the shoulder was much stronger than it had been on the Ross with a small
Did that bother you, the kick, or were you expecting it?
It was certainly stronger than I expected. And, yes, one sort of stiffened the shoulder up. To take the shock, and perhaps that wasn't the right thing to do. So at the end of the first session with the Lee Enfield, then most people had got a bit of an ache in their shoulder. But subsequently, then we did reasonably well with it. So the sergeant at the time said, "You've handled a gun before?" And I said, "Well, yes." So he said, "Oh, right, that's not bad." And I was quite happy with that result.
They didn't bother to teach you the bayonet, though? Bayonet practice.
I can't recall it. I don't think we had this running business into the straw sack and things like that.
Did they teach you how to clean it and look after it? And this idea of it being your weapon, or was it just part of a process of learning to fire, shoot?
You see, we had two occasions like this. I think we got basics. Yes, I think we got the basics of cleaning, but they were weren't in first class condition. I would imagine. This is later on when we were posted away that we covered more of that.
Now, any other weapons, or is that it?
No, that was it. That was it.
So, anything else you were doing there?
Cross country. We had a certain number of lectures on, Air Force law came into it, as far as I can remember. We had nothing to do with radio.
And no observation, nothing on that?
Not really.
No navigation?
No. It was purely a physical training area.
How tough were the cross countries? There's some quite hilly ground around there.
Well, we weren't very fit, not by comparison, I suppose, is what we should have been, unless anybody had been doing it at school. My items as far as sport at school had been on the athletics field, mainly high jump and long jump. I wasn't much good at running a quarter of a mile.
So how did you find the cross-country running?
Well, I wasn't the last, I wasn't the first, but yes, I got round. Probably it was a lot shorter distance than we did later on period.
Did it improve your stamina, cross-country running? Could you feel yourself getting better? Or
it certainly became easier. I haven't mentioned this before, but in the period in 1939, while I was still trying to get into the VRs, friend from school and I used to go for early morning runs. We'd get up and at 6:30 and we'd do a local run through from Alperton up to a hill which rests in the distance here, and we used to run about 3 miles each morning. So we didn't push it. It wasn't a race, it was just a gentle joggle every time, but I think things improved there and that made it easier for later on.
Now were you allowed out at all while you were at Bridge North?
Sunday afternoons. We walked down to Bridge North and looked around the town, called in at the YMCA for tea.
That was all it offered, really, was tea and a bun.
Yes, and there was something like a WVS. We'd go there, which is in a different part of the town. We'd have a second tea, I think that was about it for Sundays. There was a bit of chit chat with the ladies and what have you at
cinema
in the tea rooms. Yes.
Was there a cinema in?
Now I was coming to the cinema. There was in the camp, and we saw some films there. I can't remember staying out late enough on a Sunday to go to a cinema.
Was there a canteen in the camp you could go to?
It was an affy. Which would serve additional food in the evenings, so that one during the normal day, other than Sunday, could supplement your evening with additional food. And of course, it was one would did that, especially when you had a night duty, sort of a tuck in before you started. Yes, there was no problem about getting old beans on toast and what you would now call snacks, I suppose.
Did it have a games area, you know, with darts or billiards or whichever game they were playing, you know, or was it just an empty room?
I find it difficult to be specific about Bridgenorth. I think there was billiards or snooker, and I think there was darts. But I could be mixing this up with practically every other station. All had them.
Right, now, so what else was going on? Anything else about Bridge North? You weren't there long, were you?
No, we were due to be there for 4 weeks. And then there was going to be, there was all the bullshitting of boots. I mean, the sergeant came in on the first evening there. He says, your boots, they were. I want them shining like patent leather. Getting them to shine like patent leather was difficult because they were the boots had pimples in the toe caps were all nice and smooth leather, but the rest of the uppers were with slight pimples all over them. So people resorted to smoothing those out with heating the holding at the end of, with a teaspoon over a candle or something, and rubbing them until you've got them all smooth. They could have saved us a lot of effort by giving us boots without pimples.
I mean, was it really? I mean, was this sort of? Did he really mean it? I mean, how far was this bull taken on the boots?
They inspected your boots every week and said, "You're not doing very well. Get on with it."
Was it just the boots? Did they do a full kit inspection, you know, around your bed with everything laid out on the bed? Yes.
It was quite rare. Again, I would say it was no more than once a week. But we certainly had to lay it out.
Was it in a special manner? Or?
Oh, yes, there was a laid out thing. For ordinary times, there was a laid out layout for your blankets and for your the pillows and bedding and anything else you had. If you had an overcoat or something like that hanging up on a hook, it all had to be in the right layout. When it came to kit inspection, then of course there was another layout. The previous one I described was, of course, a normal daily clearing up before going on duty. But the kit layout, then everything had to be there in a set place so that everybody had their shoes or boots or whatever it was in the right place, and your washing facilities were laid out in another special place.
Now, anything else about Bridge North before we move on?
No, other than it being quite a strong discipline area, which we're bringing you up to behaviour and appearance standards, and a number of various lectures, and a bit of it was medical, on sort of keeping yourself healthy and what not to eat and what to do so, sort of general aircraft, Air Force law and expectations. That was it. We found out how much it cost us to the service to feed us, I think, each day, about fourpence, fivepence, I think, a day. And odd sort of things, just general background knowledge. We came to the third week, and we're getting ready for this bullshit parade, and we were posted. Came through quick, and virtually we were packed up, and we were off the next day.
Now, where were you sent to?
The six of us were all together again, and we were sent to Bertram Newton.
That's in Norfolk.
Norfolk.
And that would be just still September or into October?
Now you have me. I would say it was still September.
It's all. I appreciate these.
Unless it's not there. Is it not?
No, you were. It's got.
Have you gone on beyond there?
No. It's we're on the Bertram Newton page. But
oh yes.
It just says
no
19,
date.
It just says 1914.
Oh right.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So what were your impressions of that when you got there?
It took us all day. You'll never believe it. By using local lines, I don't know how many changes we made, but going across country was far longer and more difficult than going from London to Glasgow. And we got to King's Lynn, and it was late afternoon. And as far as I can remember, the light was going when we got the train to go through to Bertram. What was it called? Great Bertram? Anyhow, it was a number of stations along the line, along the top edge of Norfolk. And again, we were met, and I think in actual fact we had, there was a couple of lorries. I suppose there was about 40 of us by now. The vast number that had been obviously in Bridge North had been reduced down, others being sent to other places. And we were taken up to the camp, which was fair distance away. And we were then allocated to a large area, covered area, which I suppose was a hall of some sort, and it was built onto the side of one of the hangars. It was a side addition. It was actually was very big, because one half of it was the camp concert hall with a stage and seating and what have you, and the other half of it had been a gymnasium. But the gymnasium had been forfeited to become a bedding area for us newcomers. So that we walked in there carrying the kit bags and stuff, and there was two solid fuel stoves, a light, sort of warm the area up, and there was a mass of bed boards, which were three planks, and fitting either end to raise them up off the floor, about 4 inches, so just a wooden board with a couple of little spaces on it, so that it stood upright, and that was it. So we slept hard lying for a little while, 2 or 3 days, and then straw palliasses were brought in, which made it more comfortable for the hips than sleeping on boards with a thickness of a couple of blankets underneath you.
Now, what you were an aircraft in second class, of course.
That's right.
What were you joining? Was there a squadron there, or were you attached to the squadron, or were you attached to the base?
We were attached to the base. And on the first morning, after we'd all had breakfast and what have you, was paraded, and there were a number of NCOs and people available. The six of us actually kept together, and we were told by the senior that there were a number of jobs to be done on the base, and we wanted people to volunteer for this and that. So he then started calling up, we want six people for this, six people for that, the cookhouse, working in various other places, and none of it was on the duties which we had said we volunteered for.
This isn't ground defence, this is
exactly,
fatigues.
Exactly, this is sort of organised fatigues, if you like. And we got down to, there was just the six of us left, we volunteered for nothing. So the corporal came along and said, right, you lot, form up. And we marched off. I thought, where are we going? Because some of them had volunteered to work in the coal yard. And then there was a couple wanted for the barber's shop. The two very cunning lads went for the barber's shop. I must admit they got the best of the jobs there. Anyhow, we were marched off straight down to the armory. And we were in on ground defence, which we'd volunteered for the time being. And there we did just that. After one or two lectures on armaments, the sort of guns that they had in the gun pits there, which took a couple of days or so.
Now, what do you remember of the lectures? How much training did you get?
Oh, well, over that period, we learned how to use a variety of machine guns, the Vickers GO, the old Lewis gun.
Which is a Vickers GO? Is that like the heavy Vickers?
No, it was light
gas-operated.
Gas-operated one.
I don't know that one.
Yeah.
Well, what were they like, these? Do you remember much about these various
machines? Oh, well, we learned how to, not only to shoot with them, but how to strip them down, clean them, and reassemble them. And we got to the point where we could reassemble them without looking, more or less. So in case one had to do it in the dark. There was a Hispano cannon. There were Tommy guns. You know, the American type.
Thompson submachine guns.
That's right. We also covered, I think we covered Mills bombs and things like that as well, I seem to remember. And we also had firing practice on these weapons, mainly the Vickers GO or the, Lewis. When we got out into the into pits, then we were put in there in twos with somebody who knew the job to start with, and then we were there on our own.
Now, describe one of these well, weapons pits. And which machine gun did you actually have in yours, a Lewis or a Vickers?
Well, it just depended on which pitch you were put on at that time. You were reported in the morning at 8 o'clock or whatever it was, if you were on gun pit duties, and I can't tell you how many there were around. There was probably four or five of them around the, or perhaps a bit more, around the perimeter. And the sergeant and call us the crew, anyhow. We were then marched from one pit to the other, dropping off two each time.
So it's two in each one. Mm. And what did it look like?
Well, it was hole in the ground, and it had been reduced. From where the bottom of the hole was, but with sandbags all round, so it was lined with sandbags. It wasn't all that deep because of the problem of drainage, and there was a duck board at the bottom, and it then went up above the ground level with sandbags in a circle with a gap for you to enter the gun pit itself, and there was a tripod in the centre of the space within the sandbags, and the weapon was mounted on top of that. The question now arises in my mind: did we carry the weapons out with us? Because I think if you were on first duty, you might have done, but you might have very often when got on the second or third period.
Now, how long?
I can't be sure whether we carried them out or not, but the weapon was certainly mounted on this tripod, and the Lewis guns were 1914, 1918 standard, and they were belt driven, of course. And if you were in a pit where there was a Vickers GO, then of course they had a pan. Oh no, wait a minute, I'm sorry. The Vickers guns did have a pan on them. It was quite deep. I remember that now. We didn't have the belt-driven ones. It was the pan on top of them.
It's the gas-operated ones.
And then with the Vickers GO, we also had a pan on top, but I think it had carried less ammunition. It wasn't so deep. And it was a different sort of design altogether.
So
now I'm sorry, I made a mistake on the belting.
It's easily done. Now, what exactly was a tour of duty then? Not a tour of duty, a period of duty in one of these gun pits.
I think it was 2 hours.
And what would you do in that 2 hours?
If everything was all quiet, then you'd sort of clean up the gun if it needed, although my imagination is that it was cleaned in the workshops every night after at the end of duty, and it was ready for use the next morning, depending on whether it was wet or not. And there was also a case where we would take the ammunition out of the pan, make sure it was all in clipped in properly, and cleaned up, so that was ready for use as well. You had to keep an eye open for the aircraft. And there was quite a lot of flying in and out of Bertram Newton. Now, Hudsons, Ansons, and a variety of incoming aircraft as well from other sources.
Now, you're right near the coast there. I mean, a mile or two away from the coast, 5 miles, whatever.
Yes.
You must have been aware that you were liable to be attacked. Were you attacked at all during this period?
Not while I was there. We were lucky, I think. But we did get a number of aircraft making emergency landings there. There's one.
Now, what do you remember of that? I mean, that's quite a dramatic affair for people like myself who've never seen that sort of thing. I mean, what would happen?
Well, it was mainly early in the morning when they were coming back from night raids. So that more often than not, if a plane came in, then it was down and dealt with as far as getting the crew to a hospital or getting them fed and watered, so to speak, before we were out in the pits. But I remember Hampden coming in, and that made a wheels-up landing. And I'm afraid the gunner at the back, he was sort of down underneath, had been hit, and there was blood all over the place, which was quite unpleasant. I think that sort of shocked us a bit, because it was in a crashed state and
badly smashed up. Then,
well, a landing without wheels is always a bit sort of risky. In any case, but it was the chap that had been wounded by an attack from a fighter. Whether he died or not, I don't know. But
would you run out to help in circumstances like, or was it left to the proper?
Oh, well, there's a crash crew.
The crash crew.
Yes, there was a crash crew. This all happened as far as we were concerned. We didn't see it land. It was there, and so we got a. It wasn't our turn on first thing, so we've got a time to spare, and we went out to see it. As did quite a number of the other regular Air Force people. We weren't the only ones to go and have a look. But there was a lot of other aircraft came in, French, and they'd been flown over for one purpose or another and landed at Bersham. Presumably they got lost or something. This happened to be one of those which aerodromes which could take them.
Now, what were you aware much of which squadron was operating? And, you know,
I was aware of the two squadrons. As I said, there were Hudsons who were on reconnaissance.
And which squadron was that?
I can't tell.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
We could probably look it up.
It's all right.
I don't know. I've made it in the book. And there was an Anson squadron there as well, and they were on reconnaissance over the North Sea. They were in and out quite regularly, so that. One got used to seeing aircraft around, and your aircraft recognition of those two particular types improved no end. Whilst one was in the pit, I used to sort of use the gun itself with the safety catch on and figure off the trigger. And I used to as it was taking off, I used to follow it in the ring and sort of try and estimate how much further in front of the aircraft I had to fire to. Make a hit, but one was always very careful about sort of being the guns being on safe. We never had really a necessity to ever turn them onto fire.
Had you been taught about deflection shooting?
We had a lecture which covered this deflection shooting, so we practiced what we were taught.
And had you had any actual shooting practice? I mean, this is just tracking and estimating ahead.
Yes.
But, I mean, had you done things like clay pigeon shooting or anything like that? Because I know they brought that in for gunners later on.
Yes, they did.
Did you have anything
like
that?
No, we didn't have that. We had down at the butts firing at a target. And then on a variety of afternoons, we all piled into a lorry and a car with the NCOs in it. And we went off down to the beach. Was it Branscombe Sands or something like that? I'm not sure of the name. Anyhow, we went down to the beach where there was a road which obviously tourists in pre-war days had used. And along the beach away, and we piled out of the lorry. I don't think that actually made its way onto the sand. It stayed on one of the hard standings. It was a car park. But the car certainly did. And the car was fitted on the rear near side wheel. It had a drum fitted on it, bolted on with the ordinary nuts that held the wheel on. And a cable went round there. And they jacked up the car so that the wheel was free. Now, on the cable that was wound round it, they then attached a kite, and it was a big one, probably, 6 to 8 feet high? And having got that flying, then it was let up by the motor of the car, letting the wheels run. And it went up to 200-300 feet, perhaps 200 feet, in the wind it used to duck and dive, and the kite itself also carried up a drogue, which normally would in other places would have been towed by an aircraft. And we had a wooden frame which was kept down on the beach with a scarf ring, and the machine gun which we took with us in the lorry was mounted up there. And I suppose there would be about 10 of us, 6 of us that were normally together, and perhaps 4 others. And we'd each have a go at firing the drogue, or at the drogue, and they'd haul it back in just by running the putting the engine in gear, running it down. And they'd then count out how many misses you probably made and how few hits you've got. But the ammunition was coloured so that it, when it perforated the drogue, it left a mark. So it was either green or black or red. And
how'd you done?
Fair. I like everybody else. It was a bit of luck, because with the breeze blowing, then it was up and down and away like that.
And was the car going along the side?
No. It was jacked up at the back, so that the back wheel, the driving wheel, would operate the drum, which the cable was on.